Where the crossroads meets between toil and sin, and that is where the fun begins. It's Film Bookcast, the official podcast of filmbook.com. My name is Mike Smith, and joining me as always is a man who's not afraid to die because he's done it already.
Mike DiCrescio.
How you doing today, Mike?
Good, good. I always feel so bad for you because when you make those awesome intro jokes, I don't make a noise, but I laugh, so you just sound like you're laughing to your own joke.
I mean, it's a little bit of both, I think.
Yeah, a little bit.
If there's one thing I know about myself, it's that I laugh at my own jokes very easily.
That's all that matters, as long as you crack yourself up.
Yeah, that's all that's important, really, in life.
Yeah. That and Cold-Blooded Revenge.
Right, which is the plot of this podcast, and The Revenant. Now, if you've never listened to Film Bookcast before, essentially we start with some film news, and then we move on to some discussions where Mike and I each discuss whatever piece of media we've been consuming lately. After that, we will move on to our feature review. This week, we are reviewing the new film from Alejandro González Iñárritu, The Revenant. You excited, Mike?
Yeah. I feel like we're going to have a lot to talk about for this movie.
I hope so. I hope this will be a fun discussion. But before we get into that, let's go on to film news.
Yes.
So some pretty big film news that we're getting to in a minute. But I just wanted to throw this out there. Michael Bay returning to direct Transformers 5.
All right. Great.
Moving on.
Yeah, pretty much.
Now, I mean, I saw this news came out, and the reason I included it here is because it just seems so, like, Michael Bay has said every time he's finished a Transformers movie, like, since the second one, that, like, he's done making Transformers movies.
Yeah.
And then he keeps coming back.
I think it's because he can't resist the call of millions and millions of dollars.
I could definitely see that. I could definitely see that.
It's probably a tough struggle to work through.
But he's even got a new movie this weekend out in theaters called 13 Hours, The Secret Soldiers of Benghazi.
Yes.
And, he's, like, sort of, like, been kind of moving into more interesting projects like that, or Pain and Gain a couple years ago. Yeah. And so it's always weird to me that he just keeps going back to these Transformers movies. It's almost like, I feel like at this point, it's mostly like he does this Transformers movie and then the studio will let him do this other movie that he actually wants to do.
Yeah, he does the Transformers movie, makes all this crazy amount of money that can so he can afford to do this other project that he wants to do.
Right.
And then he comes back for more Transformers.
Exactly, yeah, because Pain and Gain didn't make a ton of money, and I doubt 13 Hours is going to be a big hit either.
I haven't heard a single thing about it, so really? Probably not.
I've heard not bad things.
Oh. Which the more you know.
Which for a Michael Bay movie is pretty good.
Yeah, that's true.
I'm interested in 13 Hours. I actually like Michael Bay when he's not doing Transformers stuff. I feel like he's like he can do crazy blockbuster action like very few directors can.
That's great.
And 13 Hours looks like a more restrained kind of version of Michael Bay while still being, you know, like a rah-rah patriotism action movie.
Yeah.
From Michael Bay. So I don't know. I just thought it was interesting that he's going back to direct Transformers 5 after doing 13 Hours, which probably means, hopefully, that he'll do some kind of cool, interesting project after Transformers 5 before he inevitably returns to Transformers 6.
Yeah. Basically, they're going to just make these movies, the Transformers movies, forever, I think.
Yeah, I mean, these Transformers movies are so, like, ridiculously successful, and I can't think of a single person who, like, really likes them, you know?
Yeah, I've never heard anyone say, I love Transformers, yet they still make whatever insane amounts
of
money.
Over $1 billion, like, each time. Like, it's nuts. It's ridiculous.
That's so sad. I don't understand.
Like, it's weird. I think a big draw of the movie is Michael Bay's style for those Transformers movies. Like, I think he brings a lot to those movies, but, it's also, like, all of his worst tendencies come out in those movies, too.
100%, yeah.
So, I don't know, but I did want to mention that because it's just, it's just an odd, not even odd, it's just, like, I don't know what it is, but it's not good, is what I'm saying.
Yeah. I understand. Don't worry.
Yeah. I never saw Transformers 4, actually, but you did, right?
I did see that. Yeah, that's the Mark Wahlberg one, right?
Yep. Age of Extinction.
Yeah. Shows you how much I remember. yeah. I remember Dinobots were in it, so that was cool.
Right. I heard they were only in, like, the last, like, 30 seconds or something, too. Though.
Yeah. Yeah. It didn't really make a whole lot of sense, but it's kind of like saying the Rhino was in The Amazing Spider-Man 2.
Right. Yeah. He only has, like, a cameo at the beginning and a cameo at the end.
Yep, that's it.
All right, well, that's Michael Bay directing Transformers 5. But I did want to get to the big news this week. So this happened earlier this morning. This is like fresh off the presses.
Yeah.
Like if they had presses, they would stop them to.
Yeah, they would stop them to do whatever that saying means.
To add, well, when you stop the presses, you're stopping them so you can add a late breaking story. I believe.
There you go. But it all makes sense now.
But we don't have presses anymore because we live in the digital age.
That's right. You just click edit on your blog and you're fine.
But this is a movie. So I'm going to try to describe what's happening here. Because
okay. Walk us through the process.
Well, Dan Trachtenberg is a guy who used to be on the Totally Rad Show. And he's been working in short films in the past. A couple years ago, he made a Portal No Escape short film, which is widely shared on the internet. It was really popular. And since then, he's been attached to certain projects. Like he's going to make Why the Last Man, but that didn't end up panning out. And he ended up doing this project with Bad Robot that was going by the name Valencia, and it was going to star Mary Elizabeth Winstead and John Goodman. Now, Mike, I know you're a big fan of Dan Trachtenberg from the Totally Rad Show, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Totally Rad Show was like one of my favorite podcasts.
Yeah, you were a big fan, and you know, it's that show's no longer exists. Because of Dan Trachtenberg going off to do things like film wise, and Jeff Cannata leaving to go to
doing 8,000 other podcasts.
Yeah. Whole bunch of other stuff. Dan Trachtenberg has been quietly working on this movie that was going by the name Valencia for about a year. And earlier today, news broke out that a trailer for this movie that Dan Trachtenberg had been working on had gone out with some screenings of 13 Hours, the Michael Bay movie.
Right.
Which echoes the marketing process for another Bad Robot movie called Cloverfield.
Correct.
Where the original trailer for that movie came out with Transformers, the original Transformers.
Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah. And so that kind of got people talking, it kind of got people buzzing, because like that Cloverfield trailer, the title to this movie was not attached to this trailer when it was brought, when it was taken to those screenings.
Right.
And then the trailer got put online.
Yep.
And if you watch the trailer, which you have not seen the trailer yet?
No. I was so tempted. I went to the YouTube page. And then I was like, no, I can't do it. Because I feel like this is the kind of movie going in knowing absolutely nothing will be a lot of fun.
Fair enough, yeah. I mean,
just like it was for Cloverfield, like the original one.
Right. So you're getting ahead of me, like.
Well, you said the same thing.
So what I'm saying is that the trailer came out online, and this time it had the title attached to it.
Yeah.
And the trailer plays. It's about like a minute and 45 seconds. Trailer plays, and then it cuts to black. And you just see the word Cloverfield come up, and then the rest of the title comes up.
That's awesome.
10 Cloverfield Lane is the new name of this movie. And this set the internet ablaze.
It did, yeah.
For a while. I mean, yeah, so I don't know how you feel about about Cloverfield, but I really like that movie.
Yeah, I don't know if I've seen it since I saw it in theaters, but I do remember having a lot of fun and enjoying it a lot.
Yeah, I've actually not seen it in a very long time either. And J.J. Abrams, producing the movie as its Bad Robot film, is describing it as a blood relative of Cloverfield. So I guess what they're doing is not exactly a Cloverfield sequel, which is a lot of people thought. Like, a lot of people thought, like, oh, it's a Cloverfield 2, oh my god!
Yeah,
because when Cloverfield came out, they were talking about doing a sequel to that movie.
Right.
I remember one of the big theories was that they were going to do like a parallel sequel where like there's just going to be a different guy with a video camera, like during the same event.
That's kind of awesome, actually.
Which would have been interesting, but that never came to fruition. And Cloverfield was a pretty big hit, from what I remember.
Yeah,
And that was almost entirely because of the marketing, which revealed nothing. And even withheld the movie's title for a really long time, which is ridiculous.
Yeah, that was one of the pioneers of viral marketing. I remember there were websites set up for the whatever company owned the satellite that crashed during Cloverfield. Like, there was a lot of really interesting, cool stuff going on with the marketing for that film.
Yeah, and this movie is looking to like emulate that sort of thing. And not only that, 10 Cloverfield Lane is being released in 2 months.
Yes. I'm so excited for that. I think that's the best idea that I could have done.
March 11th, 2016 is when this movie's coming out. So not only did we not know that there was this quasi-Cloverfield sequel being made.
Yeah.
But it's coming out in 2 months. This is like when Bethesda announced Fallout 4 after years of development and said, oh, it's coming out this year.
Comes out in 6 months.
Comes out in 6 months.
and I think that's a really great thing, because we get a lot of stuff now, marketing-wise, that's like, this movie will come out, you will see it in 5 years. Yep. And, like, who can be hyped about something interested in that long?
We've complained about this on the podcast before. Like, studios are announcing their movies through 2021. Like,
yeah.
You know, I'm excited about a lot of those movies, but I'm not going to care about them for years from now. And so much can change in that time.
Yeah.
This is a movie that's basically done. Like,
I would hope so. Or else we're kind of screwed.
It's in the can. This is like when, Beyonce or Radiohead, like, just releases their album, like, without telling anybody.
Yeah, that's exactly what this is.
And it's like the movie equivalent of that. And I hope like this kind of influences other movies to do that. I like this idea of just a sequel to a movie that was really popular.
Yeah.
Coming out, nobody knows about it, and then it comes out. Like,
yeah, I feel like it's been a long time too since Cloverfield.
Cloverfield came out in 2008, January 2008.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, it was 8 years since Cloverfield came out. So it's been a long time. I had not expected a sequel to Cloverfield. I don't think anybody was super demanding it. But this isn't a sequel. I think what they're doing is like taking the name Cloverfield and kind of turning it into this like anthology series that they're going for, I believe.
Yeah, that's kind of what I saw. There was a few articles written about that Bad Robot kind of wants to just spin this into an ongoing universe, I guess. Like, it's just going to be set in that world.
I can totally see it, and I feel like you know, the original Cloverfield was directed by Matt Reeves, and it was his first film. Mm-hmm. And he went on to direct, Let Me In, which was the English remake of Let the Right One In.
Right.
Dawn of the Planet of the Apes, and he's working on War of the Planet of the Apes right now. And this is, similarly, this is Dan Trachtenberg's first film.
Right.
And based on the trailer, like, the movie looks really good. Like, it's very well composed and everything like that. So I'm hoping if this is, like, the case, like an anthology series sort of thing, if they could, like, just kind of jump in, take a chance on these new directors and let them, like, do their own thing, do their own, like, weird story, and, you know, their careers could get a huge boost out of it.
Yeah, yeah, I think that's a really cool idea. That's, I feel like, kind of similar to what is it, Blumhouse? That, I mean, not, like, with this anthology thing, but, like, letting new directors or, you know, get low-budget cool stuff out.
Yeah.
So I think that's awesome. That would be a cool move for Bad Robot to do.
Definitely, yeah. But, yeah, that news was, like, crazy. It took the internet by storm.
Yeah.
But there's other big film news coming out this week. This is a big week for film news. But the Oscar nominations came out.
Yes.
This week. A couple days after the Golden Globes happened, which we recapped at the end of our Complete Works.
Right.
Poor placement, but, you know, I'm going with it. But
it happened.
But the big winners of the Golden Globes were The Revenant and The Martian, for those interested.
Yeah.
Anyway, so the Oscar nominations came out. So I'm just going to list off the Best Picture nominees, and then maybe I'll list off a couple of the other ones. But the Best Picture nominees, there are 8 of them. They are The Big Short, Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max, Fury Road, The Martian, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight. Now, of those movies, Mike, what is the biggest surprise to you?
Bridge of Spies, I think.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
I haven't seen the Brooklyn or Room or, yeah, but I don't know.
Okay, yeah, I mean, Bridge of Spies, it's not really a shock to me that it's here because it's a Steven Spielberg movie. Steven Spielberg,
yeah.
Steven Spielberg Cold War thriller starring Tom Hanks just seems like like it's an Oscar movie. But
yeah, it does, you're right.
And I really like Bridge of Spies, so I'm pretty psyched that it's here. So there's that. I mean, Mad Max Fury Road is a movie that's, you know...
I guess, yeah, if I were to sit down and think about it, that's the biggest shock.
I had dreams that Mad Max Fury Road would get nominated for Best Picture.
Yeah.
And that George Miller would get nominated for Best Director. And that it would get 10 nominations at the Oscars.
Oh,
I never really, like, I don't think I really thought that it could, you know? It's just so, like, not the kind of movie that usually gets nominated for Oscars. And I'm super excited that it's here. I think, you know, of the movies that are nominated here, I've not yet seen Brooklyn or Room.
Right.
But of the 6 that I've seen, I think Mad Max is my favorite.
Yeah, yeah. I hope it rides eternal, shiny and gold.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. It's going to be a good day in Valhalla when Mad Max Fury Road wins Best Picture.
Oh, man.
But do not, my friends, become addicted to Oscars. They will take hold of you and you'll resent their absence.
I know. It's going to be tough when next year we don't have more Mad Max Fury Road.
Right? And Best Director nominees, George Miller was nominated for Mad Max, Adam McKay for The Big Short, Tom McCarthy for Spotlight, Alejandro Gonzalez Iñárritu for The Revenant, and Lenny Abrahamson for Room, which was kind of a big shock. A really welcome shock. I've not seen Room yet, but I've heard really great things. And just like the fact that somebody like Lenny Abrahamson was able to get in and like wedged out probably. I think Ridley Scott was the favorite to get in there.
To get nominated.
Yeah. The fact that he edged out Ridley Scott was kind of nuts.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty crazy. Noticeable absence of Ryan Coogler in there.
Yeah, absolutely. No Ryan Coogler for Creed, which is really, you know, it's upsetting. Because I loved Creed. I was hoping for a little bit more Creed love. Stallone did get nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Yeah.
But, you know,
and I think it's nominated for Best Original Screenplay.
Well, no. It is not. No? No. I mean, it's it might be adapted. No, not nominated for adapted either. But it wouldn't be original because the way the rules work is if it's a sequel to something, it's considered an adapted screenplay.
Oh, okay. So that makes sense. I thought I saw it somewhere else nominated for something, but I don't remember.
Yeah, no, I think it's only nominated for supporting actor.
Yeah, I think I was thinking of Straight Outta Compton.
Straight Outta Compton is nominated for original screenplay.
Right. There you
go. But you know, one of the things that people have made mention of this year and last year as well is that everybody nominated in the action categories is a white guy.
Yep.
And white lady in the actress categories, but there's no people of color or other ethnicities in this Oscars.
In any of this. Yeah, any of this, pretty much.
Yeah. To the point where, like you're nominating Creed and Straight Outta Compton.
Right.
And you're nominating the white guys behind those movies.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what happened.
And it's a little odd. It's a little weird. And, you know, I mean, the Academy has actually gotten a little bit more diverse over the past few years or so. Like, younger people have been getting in.
Right.
And people of other different colors are coming in as well. But it's still an overwhelmingly white male over 50,
right.
You know, group of people. And I think the choices here, especially for like Best Picture and Best Director, are really like interesting and different. But if you look at the Best Actor categories, it's like I like the I've only seen Matt Damon, DiCaprio, and Fassbender, their movies, The Martian, The Revenant, and Steve Jobs.
Okay.
And I think they all get very good performances. Everything I've heard about Bryan Cranston and Trumbo, I've heard he's very good. I've heard Trumbo is not that good.
Yeah, but it's a movie about a blacklisted screenwriter in Hollywood in the 50s.
Right, like, so the Oscars have to nominate it.
Yeah.
And then Eddie Redmayne in The Danish Girl, which, I mean, that movie just looks dreadful. Like,
yeah, I've heard the way it handles transgender issues is not very deftly. So
that's what I've heard as well. And, I'm not a big fan of Tom Hooper either. And Eddie Redmayne won last year also.
Right. Yeah, I wish he had... I hope he gives us a better performance than Jupiter Ascending, or as good a performance as he did in Jupiter Ascending.
I think as good as is the better better yes. analogy. And then Best Actress, there are some interesting ones. Brie Larson's nominated for Room, and she won the Golden Globe for it. I feel like she's got a really good shot, and I'm pulling for her. I haven't seen Room yet, so I really shouldn't be, but
but just on principle,
I love Brie Larson, and she's like. Quietly been one of the best actresses working today, and I'm surprised that Room got as many nominations as it did, as well as Ex Machina, which are both by A24, which has been quietly making great movies for, you know, a couple of years now. And Ex Machina was nominated for Best Original Screenplay, which was nuts.
Great.
As well as Best Visual Effects. So that was
Oh man, that's tough. I got to choose between that and I'm sure Mad Max is nominated for that also.
Screenplay? No.
No, for visual effects.
Oh, yes, it's nominated for visual effects. Yeah, the visual effects ones are Ex Machina, Mad Max, The Martian, The Revenant, and Star Wars Force Awakens.
Ugh, that's too hard to pick.
Yep. But yeah, and Star Wars is nominated for a couple of awards, mostly in the... It's pretty much all like visual effects or sound editing.
Right.
That kind of stuff. Only a couple. But Mad Max, 10 nominations.
Which is outrageous.
That's insane! Like, the love for Mad Max is strong. I'm really hoping. I'm really pulling for it.
Yeah, well, we keep saying that it's going to, you know, dictate the future of movies for the next couple foreseeable future.
Hopefully, and the Academy can recognize evidence of it. That. Yeah. Now, what do you like? Putting aside your love for Mad Max, what do you think has the best shot of winning Best Picture?
Wow. Read them to me again. This is like, well, this is a tough choice.
Okay, The Big Short.
Okay.
Bridge of Spies, Brooklyn, Mad Max, The Martian, The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight.
I could see The Revenant winning, but that seems unlikely.
Yeah, I don't. The Revenant is a movie that it was nominated by, or was directed by Alejandro González Iñárritu, and he won last year for Birdman.
Right.
And he won director as well. He won Best Picture and Best Director. So that has not it has not happened where somebody has won those awards twice in a row since the 40s when John Ford did it.
Yeah. Like, so this is not John Ford level directing and filmmaking. So I'm not sure that'll happen ever again. I feel like Spotlight could take it just because it's subject matter and like what it is. I hate that that's a thing, and it totally is. Like this, like, yep, Oscar movie. Although I haven't seen it, so I'm not 100% sure. But I could see it happening.
I mean, Spotlight's a very good movie. I liked it a lot. And it got a lot of love here. Tom McCarthy was nominated for Best Director, which was actually kind of surprising to me because it's a very understated movie. As I mentioned in one of my discussions, like it's a movie that kind of just unfolds and like lets you observe things. And so it was surprising to me that the guy's made nominations as it did. It's not a very showy movie,
right?
You know, so like Tom McCarthy's direction is very understated. The performances, two of which are nominated in the supporting categories, Rachel McAdams and Mark Ruffalo, are also like very understated. And there's no like big Oscar moment.
Right.
In those performances. So I was surprised to see them there. But, you know, happy nonetheless. I thought that was very cool.
Yeah. What about you, Mike? What would be your pick?
I would probably say Spotlight.
Spotlight?
Yeah, because I would take out Bridge of Spies because as much as I liked it, and it's not really nominated for much else, I don't think. Mark Rylance is nominated for Best Supporting Actor. And it probably has a couple other nominations here and there. Best Original Score. Yeah. Best Original Score is nominated for. But, you know... Generally speaking, so the Oscar, this is kind of like the unofficial rule that I've been going by. The movies that are nominated for Best Director are the ones that actually have a shot at winning Best Picture.
Right. That makes sense, because if it's the best movie, everything else about it should be the best.
Right. And that hasn't totally lined up in the past couple of years, but like, you know, the only one that has to be an exception is when Argo won Best Picture, Ben Affleck was not even nominated for Best Director.
Right.
Right. But so if you're going by the usual rule, you can eliminate Bridge Spies, Brooklyn, and The Martian.
Right.
Right? So that leaves Room, The Revenant, Spotlight, The Big Short, and Mad Max. I feel like...
I love that Mad Max is there. It's so good. It's so good.
Yeah. I'm going to eliminate The Revenant because Iñárritu won last year. I'm going to eliminate Room because Abramson, it's you know, it's an indie movie and it's very small scale. Like, it's not a movie that a ton of people have seen. So that leaves Spotlight, The Big Short, and Mad Max.
Right.
And I really want Mad Max to win. I'm really pulling for it.
Yeah.
But if I'm talking about, like, likelihood here, I eliminate Mad Max.
Yeah.
And then it's down between Spotlight and The Big Short. And The Big Short's gotten a surprising, like, push here. Like, it's nominated for a bunch of stuff. And it's a movie that I saw and I thought was fine. I wasn't, like, over the moon about it. Mm-hmm. But I like Adam McKay, and so I'm pretty psyched that he's here. And he's the director of Step Brothers is nominated for... He's
nominated for an Oscar.
Best Director. But his previous movie was Anchorman 2. Like...
What a future to live in.
I know. But so between Tom McCarthy for Spotlight and Adam McKay for The Big Short, like, I feel like Spotlight is the, you know, it edges out for me. I feel like The Big Short's a little all over the place and it's a pretty good actor showcase. But I feel like Spotlight is a more consistent story, throughout. That's me. However, Mad Max Fury Road should win. I hope it does. I feel like Mad Max could definitely win. Like, it could pull it off, and it could be amazing.
I feel like it has an actual chance.
Yeah, like, I never expected to make it this far, you know?
Yeah, I know. It's wild. we'll have to just wait and see.
Yeah, wild stuff. And yeah, other nominees. I mean, a couple of Hateful Eight nominations here. Jennifer Jason Leigh's nominated Best Supporting Actress.
Mm-hmm.
It's also nominated Best Original Score, I think. Yeah, Ennio Morricone. Best Original Song, huge snub, in my opinion. Wiz Khalifa should have been nominated for for See You Again from Furious 7. You know,
yeah, it's tragic that he's left out.
Huge oversight. I'm pretty upset about it.
Yeah, well, we know only white people could be nominated, so. You yeah. should have been expecting that, Mike.
Hence, Sam Smith.
Yep.
Yeah, and I mean, I don't know, I'm just looking over the, I'm just looking over like random categories and seeing Mad Max Fury Road nominated in them. I'm like, wow, that's so cool. Yeah, it's nominated for Best Cinematography. It's nominated for Best Makeup and Hairstyling. It's nominated for Best Costume Design. It's nuts. We're living in a golden age. But yeah, so.
A chrome age.
A chrome age. A shiny and chrome age. otherwise, I mean, is there anything else you wanted to mention about the Oscars before we move on?
No, I think that's it. We covered touched all bases.
Okay, cool. Yeah, the Oscars are going to be on February 26th, I think. 28th. February 28th. Last day of February. Yeah. No, this is a leap year.
It's a leap year.
Second to last day of February. The penultimate day of February.
Good job, Mike.
Usually the ultimate day. Is that where penultimate
second to last.
Right, I know that. But is ultimate like considered the last? Like, is that a thing?
Yeah, the final.
I mean, why don't you just say the last or the final?
Because ultimate's more intense, I guess.
All right. The penultimate day of February. It's going to be the Academy Awards, so hopefully Mad Max Fury Road can pull through. And we should specify, like, we don't really care what wins and what does not win an Oscar. But, I mean,
it'd be nice.
It's cool to see the stuff that you really like get, you know, recognized in some way.
Yeah, definitely. And
specifically the people who make the stuff you really like.
Right.
Like George Miller. So, in any case, let's move on from our film news segment. We're going to go on to our discussions. And for our discussions, we're going to eschew the...
Wow.
You look depressed at the...
Yeah, look at you go.
We're going to
it's not even Sunday, and you're using all the Sunday words.
we're going to eschew the usual discussions topics of the various media we've been watching. Because this past week... you know, a couple of like tremendous pop culture figures passed away and under very similar circumstances too, which is very odd. They're both 69-year-old British men who had cancer and nobody knew about it,
right?
Until they passed away. And so on Monday we found out that David Bowie, phenomenal singer and unique pop culture phenomenon, had died of cancer. And then on Thursday, we found out that Alan Rickman, star of films like the Harry Potter franchise and Die Hard and several other things, had also passed away of the same thing. So, I mean, Mike, how did you react to both of these deaths when you found out? Like,
I'm complete shock. I had no idea that either of them had cancer. So it's tragic. It's sad. There are people that create things that you... that are important to you, and
right.
that person's gone now. And that's, you know, that's a shame.
It is. And, you know, for both of them, we'll focus on David Bowie first and then move on to Alan Rickman.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, David Bowie, I mean, he just seemed like he could do it all. You know, he was, like, he meant a lot to a lot of people. I know so many people who were obsessed with his stuff, with his music and with his films and everything like that. And, I mean, he wasn't that to me. Like, he wasn't an obsession for me, but he was somebody whose work I always admired, you know,
yeah,
and somebody whose work I always enjoyed. And I wanted to mention him on this podcast because in addition to his music career, which is probably what he's most known for, he did a lot of film work as well. And specifically, like, I think he's probably most well-known film-wise for starring in the Jim Henson movie Labyrinth. But in addition to that, I mean, he was in The Prestige as Nikola Tesla in that movie, where he was amazing. But,
yeah, that scene is pretty awesome.
Yeah, it's fantastic. He's also in movies like Merry Christmas, Mr. Lawrence, The Last Temptation of Christ by Martin Scorsese, David Lynch's Wild at Heart, which we'll be talking about in a little while, in a couple of weeks for The Complete Works. And his music was often used amazingly in films as well. I'm thinking like the scene in Glorious Bastards where they play Putting Out the Fire with Gasoline, or Cat People's name of the song.
Right. Yeah, I mean, even in Guardians of the Galaxy, they use when they fly into the Titan, like they,
yeah,
it's amazing. Like his every, I don't know.
Yeah, he's got a very unique voice, and you know, I mean, his music was there's the movie. It's kind of a funny story where they have a whole whole karaoke segment to Under Pressure, which he did with Queen.
Right.
And Zach Galifianakis is doing it. It's amazing. It's really good. One of the final episodes of Mad Men used a space oddity in its closing credits. It's a great effect. And several other movies and TV shows like that.
Yeah. Just everything David Bowie stood for, the, you know, uniqueness, be yourself. You know, he didn't conform to, you know, anybody's standards. And it's just what he represented for, you know, art and in general, and music and movies and everything.
Yeah.
It's a big loss, I think.
Yeah, no, I agree. It really, and I mean, I work at a classic rock radio station.
Yeah.
And had woken up to find out this news and, like, just went, like, was going to work. And yeah, it was very weird. Like, it was a very odd time because, you know, you just, like, how do you even, like, do a classic rock show?
Without David Bowie stuff.
Knowing that happened. Yeah. It's pretty weird. And then Alan Rickman died just a couple days later, and that hit me like a ton of bricks.
Yeah. It's a different type of thing, because Bowie was this grandiose cultural icon, and Alan Rickman is a cultural icon also. The stuff that he's been a part of.
Right.
It will, I think, stand the test of time.
Yeah. I've been a Harry Potter fanatic since I was a little kid, and, you know, I don't think there's ever been. I feel like if you look at the greatest castings of all time, like Alan Rickman as Severus Snape is up there. Like he's,
oh my god, yeah,
it's unreal how good he is in that movie, how perfectly he fits that character.
Yeah,
and in addition to that, I'm a huge fan of Die Hard.
Right, the greatest Christmas movie of all time.
Exactly, where he plays Hans Gruber, the villain of that film, and again, he's amazing in that movie. But then, I mean, just thinking of like Galaxy Quest or Dogma.
Yeah,
Sweeney Todd, Robin Hood, Prince of Thieves, Love Actually. Those are other high-profile roles he had. You know, he was this phenomenal, great actor. He's a guy who could pause in the middle of every single word in a sentence.
Yeah,
and it would still be like super compelling. Like, and yeah, he did.
Yeah, exactly. He's one of the actors that I could listen to read the phone book.
Exactly.
He's in that category.
Yeah. I'm gonna play a clip from the first Harry Potter movie.
No foolish wand waving or silly incantations in this class. As such, I don't expect many of you to appreciate the subtle science and exact art that is potion making. However, for those select few who possess the predisposition, I can teach you how to bewitch the mind and ensnare the senses. I can tell you how to bottle fame, brew glory, and even put a stopper in death. Then again, maybe some of you have come to Hogwarts in possession of abilities so formidable that you feel confident enough to not pay attention.
But Kevin Smith has been posting on Facebook some very beautiful, tributes and thoughts about Alan Rickman and his role in Dogma.
So
people should check those out if they're interested. I don't know.
Right. Yeah, definitely. I'd seen other, like the Harry Potter cast members had all did their thing as well. And it's crazy because, I mean, this is like the Harry Potter franchise specifically is something that we both grew up with.
Yeah.
That like those movies came out from 2001, 2011. So it was like almost every year for 10 years, there was a new Harry Potter movie with Alan Rickman in it.
Yep.
And you watched as his character evolved over those 10 years. He was always like in terms of the actors in those movies, like he was one of the best, and those movies got a lot of great actors, in them. But I mean, and he brought like an emotional weight to, those movies, specifically in the last one.
Yeah, definitely.
Where there's so much like pain and turmoil that he brings to Snape that you get in that like very lengthy scene where Harry like goes into like Snape's memories.
Yeah.
And I remember when that movie came out, because people were saying that Alan Rickman should have gotten, like, an Oscar nomination for, like, supporting actor or something.
Yeah.
You know, and he didn't. But, you know, it's just a rough week.
Yeah, pretty much.
For fans of these 69-year-old British guys who are dying of cancer.
I guess just 69-year-old British men, just stay in your homes for the rest of the year. Don't want anything bad to happen to anybody.
Yeah, not only, like, this is tangentially related, but Lemmy Kilmister from Motorhead had just turned 70. He was 69. Had just turned 70, like, 3 days before he also died of cancer.
Wow. How about that?
It's an odd trilogy of...
comes in threes.
Yeah. In any case, Dave Bowie and Alan Rickman, rest in peace. I was super devastated to hear about both of those. But their work lives on. All right. Well, now that that's done, let's move on to our featured review of The Revenant.
Safe thing to do is track a new course back up on land.
Then what we gonna do?
Sit out there like a bunch of goddamn ducks?
You and your half-breed son get to walk on out?
I'm talking to you.
Thing to do would be to finish him off quick.
He's to be cared for as long as necessary.
I understand.
Get away! Help!
What happened?
We did what we had to do. He was buried right.
My boy, and he took him from me, you understand? He's afraid. He knows how far I came to find him.
Was from the trailer for The Revenant, the newest film from director Alejandro González Iñárritu.
So unnecessary.
Stars Leonardo DiCaprio, Tom Hardy, Domhnall Gleeson, Will Poulter, and Forrest Goodluck. The IMDb plot synopsis reads, a frontiersman on a fur trading expedition in the 1820s fights for survival after being mauled by a bear and left for dead by members of his own hunting team.
What?
I want you to do that every time I read an IMDb plot synopsis.
I'll try to remember.
Yeah, you're going to forget. this is a movie that's gotten a lot of acclaim recently. It's gotten a lot of awards buzz. It just won the Golden Globe for Best Drama, and Iñárritu won the Golden Globe for Best Director. It's coming right off of Iñárritu winning the Oscar for Birdman.
Right.
Which is a movie that we both really liked. I like Birdman quite a bit.
Yeah.
And this has a lot of the same people working on it. Iñárritu directed, and Emmanuel Lubezki, who shot Birdman, also shot this movie. And Lubezki's a phenomenal cinematographer.
My God.
Yeah. He's worked with Terrence Malick a lot in the past on movies like The Tree of Life and The New World. He's worked with Alfonso Cuarón on Gravity and Children of Men. Michael Mann, Coen Brothers. Like, he's everywhere. He's awesome.
Yeah.
There's a certain amount of expectations going into this movie, and especially the Oscar campaign has been really odd because it seems like it's entirely based around how hard the movie was to shoot.
Yeah. Yeah. I know. That's one of those, it's a weird thing where it seems people seem to be conflating a difficult production with like good.
Right.
Good.
Right. And I saw a lot of people comparing this to Mad Max Fury Road, actually, because Mad Max Fury Road was insanely difficult to shoot.
Right.
And you don't see George Miller complaining about it on the press to try to get Oscars. They just gave him the nominations anyway.
Exactly. He's that much of a baller.
I'm very much on team Mad Max.
I would have never guessed.
If you couldn't tell already.
What are we, an hour in? I would have never known.
Oh, man. But yeah, so I mean, and I'm sure The Revenant was a very hard movie to shoot. You know, they shot this movie in like the dead of winter, sub-zero temperatures. Leonardo DiCaprio ate a raw bison liver at one point, for realism's sake, for quote unquote realism, like,
right?
It's just like
natural lighting,
yeah, yeah. And so, you know, with all that, I mean, do you think The Revenant is a worthy product of that difficult production?
I do, yes. I believe it is.
Okay, I mean, expand on that.
Oh, what? I have to have an answer prepared? No.
Do you want me to say more things?
Yeah. Yeah, I do believe that it's worthy of the praise it's getting. It does walk this interesting line between, you know, gritty realism of, you know, them wading in and out of frozen rivers, him eating Leonardo DiCaprio eating raw bison and shivering under bear skin, like gritty, intense realism that put me in this film. It seemed to increase the stakes because it is at its heart a survival film. I mean, it is a revenge story, but it's for a good portion of it, it's just about Leonardo DiCaprio trying to not die. And if I feel like him being such a great actor in this film and with the difficult circumstances that he's actually in while filming it, it makes the audience believe, which, you know, there is this, you know, suspension of disbelief, but it put me there. I was in this film. I was on board. I was actually worried about what was happening. So I think it was worth it for me.
Okay.
That was the other point I knew there was a point I was gonna make. it walks the line between that and like this odd spiritualism that happens. There's segments which I've heard people say are just like not masturbatory, but like just because we can and make it weird and make it surreal. But I felt it lent to the film, the story, so I was okay with them.
Okay. I walked out of The Revenant and, you know, I had some time to process it. And my main thought is this. Howard Hawks, one of the great directors of the 40s and 50s, had a saying that a great movie is like three good scenes and no bad ones.
Right.
Right? I think The Revenant exists to test the limits of that theory.
Okay.
Because I think there are good scenes in The Revenant.
Yeah.
And I don't think there are any bad ones, but this is... Ah, man. I just think this movie is so, like, ridiculously bloated.
Okay.
It's a 156-minute movie that feels way longer than that. It feels like it could have been cut down to 100.
Yeah.
Like making it an hour and 40 minutes. And... And I might be on board for this. I'm all for slow burns. I'm all for silent scenes. It just felt like completely up its own ass most of the time. And there's good stuff I liked about. I think Emmanuel Lubezki is a great cinematographer, and the movie looks amazing.
Yeah.
And the performances overall are very good. I think much of the film wordlessly follows DiCaprio's fight for survival, right?
Yeah.
And like I think he's good in the role. He carries it well. You know. Like, his performance has to be good in order for us to care about this character because, you know, he's doing, like, all he's doing is, like, silent acting for a very long time.
Yeah. Most of it is him crawling and, like, drooling.
Right. Right. So, I mean, I think he's good. I think he's been better before.
Okay.
I think he is better in other films. I think he's better when he's being, like, the suave, charming asshole in a lot of his other movies, like in Wolf of Wall Street or Django or Great Gatsby, just a couple other examples. So I think this is it's odd that this is the movie that's going to win him an Oscar. Because like,
yeah, I feel like that joke has come to a head now.
I think, I guess I'll save it for spoilers, but there's a joke that I do want to make. Okay. Yeah, I mean, this is the movie that will win him an Oscar. I feel like this, like looking at the nominees that are out, like we were talking about before, it's like Bryan Cranston, Matt Damon, Michael Fassbender, and Eddie Redmayne, the other nominees. I feel like nobody has as much momentum in this category right now than DiCaprio does. Like,
yeah.
And it's, you know, I think it's like we should be rewarding the performance and not necessarily for his career.
Right. Like, yeah, this is going to be that's what this is for. It's like, yeah, we've messed up and didn't give it to you yet. So
yeah, it feels like one of the things where it's like, well, it's DiCaprio's turn. He's waited long enough.
Right.
That said, he's good in the movie. Like I don't like begrudge him an Oscar for this. But you know, he carries the movie very well. And the other two main characters, Tom Hardy and Domhnall Gleeson, are very good too. I think Tom Hardy's actually really good in this movie.
Yeah. Yeah, he's pretty wild. That seems like a pretty crazy transformation for him to make.
Yeah, Tom Hardy's in two Oscar-nominated movies this year.
Yeah, I think the key to success is Tom Hardy, apparently.
Tom Hardy not saying much.
Yeah. Oh, that's the key.
Yep. So, I mean, and yeah, I think there are well-staged, very engaging scenes. I think the opening raid is really good. The scene where the Indians attack the frontiersmen.
Yep.
But I think just as much there are scenes that just don't work for me at all. I thought the bear attack, which is the inciting incident of the movie, fell completely flat for me.
Really? Okay.
Yeah. I don't know. I just felt like the bear never really felt real to me. Like it looked like a CGI creation.
Well, yeah. Okay.
And like I
don't. That's true. That is a valid thing, I guess, for a film that is kind of lending or hinging itself upon realism.
Yeah, for a movie that looks the way it does and like has such a like a commitment to looking as realistic as it does.
Yeah,
the fact that it's like a CGI bear attacking DiCaprio, and I don't know, the way DiCaprio's performance there works, like he's really giving it his all, but I feel like I could see him acting. Like,
okay,
do
yeah,
you know what I mean,
yeah, that makes sense.
And so it like that takes me out of it, and that's the inciting incident of the movie. That's like the entire reason everything happens.
Right.
You know, and so I feel like the fact that didn't work for me didn't bode well for the rest of the movie.
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. The what about the, you know, this, so the actual bear attack didn't work, but what about immediately after? I don't know if that one of these spoilers or not. You could talk about it then. But them like trying to save him in the mud, that moment, that scene when he's like bleeding out and dying after the bear attack. Excuse me. After the bear attack.
Getting choked up over there.
Oh man, poor Leo. That scene was brutal, and like people were cringing in the theater and like freaky. It was gross. And it was but powerful for me, at least.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it was brutal. I guess.
I don't know.
I mean, I feel like I don't know. Like that bear attack really took me out of it, and then like the immediate aftermath, like I was still kind of like not as engaged with the movie as I could have been because of what just preceded it. Yeah. And I mean, there are good stuff. There is good stuff in the movie. Like I did enjoy certain things, but like I said, like I feel like making this movie 156 minutes is ridiculous.
It did feel very long. Yeah.
When you know, ultimately, like it doesn't do that much. It doesn't have that much to say. The entire movie is just one character getting from point A to point B.
Right.
Right? That could be an hour and a half, hour 40 minutes. I feel like, you know, there's a similar movie, The Gray, with Liam Neeson, directed by Joe Carnahan, which is a movie that I love. Like, that is a movie that I love and does similar things to The Revenant. It's more action movie-ish than The Revenant is. But it has, like, a similar thesis. It's, you know, a guy going from one place to another, trying not to get like killed by the wilderness around him in a very snowy setting. I don't know. I mean, you know,
I think it has, there is something else. There is more being said in The Revenant than like, yep, he's just trying not to die and make it to the place. Not that that's, I know you're, that's like simplifying it, but there's a moment at the end that I think changes. I want to see this again, I think. I want to see, is this saying something about this story and film or something? You know, I'll say, we'll talk about it in spoilers, I guess. But I think there's something else going on here, and it left me with a lot to think about, and I don't know what it is yet.
That's really interesting, because I felt completely empty after leaving The Revenant. I didn't feel like it had much to say at all. But, you know, I think we should probably just move into spoilers now. I feel like this, it's weird, because I think this is the kind of movie that's like, there's not much of a plot or anything like that, and so I feel like spoilers is, like, kind of an odd term to use, because it's not really, like, spoilers. There are things to, like... I was writing down spoilers, and I only really think of, like, one big one.
Right.
But in any case, let's move on to spoilers starting right now, just to, you know, get that over with.
Just to get it over with.
Yeah.
Stop it! Both of you! You're spoiling everything!
The spoiler that I could think of that I wanted to talk about was that Tom Hardy kills DiCaprio's Indian son.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Because, I mean, in terms of, like, story beats, I feel like that's the only, like, big thing.
I think it's in the trailers, however.
Is it in the trailers?
I think so. I think they that's, like, the whole motivation for it. This is why trailers suck, because they ruin stuff like that.
Okay, I mean, I've seen The Revenant trailer several times, and I do not remember
I feel like I remember him saying, you know, he killed my boy or something in the trailer. The other one would be that Tom Hardy dies.
Okay. I mean, I feel like you can see that coming. I don't know.
That's kind of the whole point of the story.
Yeah. I feel like if Tom Hardy didn't die, it would be a little annoying. It would be an unsatisfying story.
Absolutely, yeah. But the thing that... Oh, no, go ahead.
Go ahead.
The thing that I wanted to say, and I think... I don't know what it... I haven't worked through what the film might be saying about it, but the last shot of the film is Leonardo DiCaprio looking directly into the camera. And... a lot of times, their breath is fogging the lens, the camera bumps into them during some fight scenes, and I feel like it's calling attention to the fact, like, it's a film. Like, he's addressing the fact that it's a film.
See, I thought...
okay, yeah, let's do it.
That Leo was looking directly into the camera with tears in his eyes, as if he was saying, please give me an Oscar.
It's almost the same, yeah. It's the same
that's what it looked
other side of the coin.
It was very, like... it was very artificial. It was very, like, weird. And, like, it just to me looked like, you know, he was looking directly. Like, he had tears in his eyes. He was welling up, like, giving, like trying to get the performance of his life. It looked like the clip from, you know, the scene from Wayne's World where it shows, like, Oscar clip on the bottom. Like, it says the words Oscar clip on the bottom of the scene. And Wayne's, like, getting, like, more and more dramatic. And he's like, and you know what the worst part of it all is? I never learned to read.
I thought it was going to be the product placement. I think that's Wayne's World 2, or no?
That's the first one.
That's the first one.
The product placement? Yeah, it's the first one.
Yeah.
so was my thing. But, I actually kind of started laughing in the theater because I was like, he was looking at me as if he like, I really want an Oscar. Like, it's me.
Yeah, that works too, I guess. We're allowed to have different opinions, Mike.
I know. That's what I'm saying.
But I know a lot of people felt similarly about Birdman. Like, things doing technique, using certain stuff, like, just because they know, you know, people were saying, like, oh, yep, this is going to be the Oscar movie. Yep. Like, doing... And there was a few moments in The Revenant that used a similar technique of Birdman where... The frame will look up at the sky and then, like, time lapse to show that time has passed and then come down. Which felt really out of place in The Revenant, I think, because they do that in Birdman because the whole thing is it's all one long take, you know, it's seamless.
Yeah.
But there's cuts and different scenes and stuff in The Revenant. So
I think in The Revenant it's to show you how much time has passed. Like,
yeah, that's true. But I don't know. It felt out of place because it's the same shots as Birdman, I guess.
Okay.
Not that it was just weird for me. But yeah, I think the looking into the camera has more nuance than you're giving it, Mike.
I guess. I mean, I think it's going for more nuance. I just don't think it comes across.
You don't know if it works.
Yeah. But regarding Tom Hardy's motivation, like, what's, like, he's just kind of a dick? Is that, like...
I think he is supposed to just be, well, I guess, yeah, he's a dick. And just totally, desensitized to everything. Like, when he stabs, the son, he says, like, oh, shit. Like, he didn't mean to. He just did it by, on instinct. He killed him.
Okay.
And I think we're supposed to, he's that kind of character, I think. Like, when Leonardo DiCaprio and Donald Gleason go after him, they say something, oh, he's going to enlist just so he could kill again. You know, I mean, they're just saying, like, he's an evil person. But I think he's supposed to be that kind of character that has no value, or human lives don't have value to him.
Right. Okay.
All right. So I guess, I don't know. Or he's just, like, an asshole.
And regarding the final fight between DiCaprio and Hardy, I mean, how did you feel that came across? Like, DiCaprio ultimately lets him, like, it's weird. I think it's a very muddled message.
Yes. Yeah. It doesn't handle that the spiritual aspect of it, you know, whatever that it may be.
Right. For those who haven't seen it,
Spoilers. So.
Well, yeah. But DiCaprio is, like, beating Tom Hardy to within like, an inch of his life, right? Yeah. And then, like, has, like, this kind of revelation and realizes that he shouldn't kill him, right?
Right.
Or it's not for him to do, is what he says. Yeah. Is what he says. Yeah. And then he puts Tom Hardy into a river and floats him toward a nearby band of Indians.
Yeah.
And then they proceed to kill him.
And then they kill him, yeah.
And... You know, he did that, and I was like, well, then he just killed him. Right? That's
right.
Like, DiCaprio just effectively killed Tom Hardy.
Yeah, it handles, I don't know, it's weird. It's odd, because Tom Hardy's character tells him, you know, like, go ahead, get your revenge, it won't bring your boy back. And then he says, what does he say, revenge is in God's hands, I think?
Something along those lines, yeah.
Puts him in the river, and I guess it's saying the Native Americans could have not, like, could have let him go, or like it's not, I mean, it's not, it doesn't actually absolve, what's his name? Glass, I think, is the Leonardo DiCaprio's character of anything.
Hugh Glass is his name.
Hugh Glass. Which, it doesn't actually absolve him of anything.
Which, unrelated to The Revenant, it made me laugh because, it reminds me of a Simpsons joke, which, you know, one of Bart's prank calls where, yep. You know, he asks for a huge ass. And then, but in that one, Huge Ass actually exists, and he, like, shows up and's like, hello, I'm Huge Ass.
God damn it, Mike. I love that everything is through the lens of Simpsons, too.
It's what makes me such a good critic.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm not sure if the film handles that scene well, and I don't know. I don't know if it's just because I'm on board with the film, but, like... Maybe it's not trying to, like, he's, you know what I mean? Because he says the same, Hugh Glass, throughout the whole film has this, you know, he's got the trope of, like, oh, the white man who understands the Native American thing. Like, you know, he has a son with a Native American, is, you know, and this whole thing. And the revenge is in the hands of God is something that another Native American tells him.
Right.
So I don't know what the film is saying about that trope or anything, if it's saying anything at all. But I think it's him trying to absolve himself of revenge, even though I think you're right. It doesn't actually work by him just letting him letting Tom Hardy into the river.
Yeah.
But maybe he believes it does. I don't know. I don't know what that means.
I don't know. I did think it was a very muddled message.
Yeah. I think I said the long-winded version of what you said.
All right. I don't know. What else about the movie did you want to discuss, Mike?
Well, the spiritual scenes. What did you think when he has the visions of his wife and stuff? Did that do anything? What did you think that was?
They were interesting. They didn't really do much for me. But they were interesting. They you know, I feel like I'm coming down on this movie a lot harder than I mean to.
Yeah.
Because I ultimately think it's like fine. It's like a 2.5 out of 5.
Okay.
But they reminded me a lot of Terrence Malick stuff. This movie actually feels like it's aping Terrence Malick a little bit, and partly because Emmanuel Lubezki, cinematographer for his stuff as well. But just the way, like, kind of the ethereal quality that this movie kind of has, reminds me of like The Tree of Life or Days of Heaven or anything like that.
Absolutely. There's a lot of shots of like, you know, backlit characters with like, you know, this aura around them and stuff like that going on. I agree with you on that.
Yeah. Actually, I mean, I guess the Malick movie reminds me most of is The New World, which I don't know if you've ever seen that, but that's a movie that Malick, that's the Pocahontas movie that Malick made.
Right.
Which is about Pocahontas and John Smith and like the settlers coming in to like take out the Indians. So it has like a similar, I think it has a similar like aesthetic about it as that movie does.
Definitely. Yeah, and I feel like the Revenant's like half-hearted or sort of almost kind of deals with the like destruction of the natural habitat and like that, you know, all of that going on, but doesn't like, there's a scene when I don't remember which tribe it is, the people that are hunting Leonardo DiCaprio's party trade with the French trappers,
right?
And he says like, oh, you've taken everything from us, and like that whole, you know, there's that type of exchange, but it doesn't really do much with that, or it doesn't really say anything about that. So I don't know. There's just more things. More things to think about, Mike.
Okay. I'll think about them. otherwise, I mean, I really don't have that much else to say about The Revenant. I just felt like, it felt like for a movie that has as much good things going for it as it does, I feel like I was bored a lot of the time.
Okay.
And there were good scenes. There was stuff I liked, but ultimately, it's not something that I was a super big fan of.
Right. I guess you're right. Well, it's going to test the three good scenes and no bad ones theory. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it sounds like you had like you liked more scenes than I did.
Yeah. It worked for me.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed it.
Thanks, Mike.
That's all I can say. It seems like I'm in kind of the minority on this one, but, you know, it's the way it goes sometimes.
Yeah, it's happened before. It'll happen again.
All right. If that's it, then I guess, Mike, where can we find you online this week?
You can find me at twitter.com/mdfilmblog. And if you'd like Dungeons & Dragons, my group and I stream our games sometimes. So check out twitch.tv/geonerd79.
Okay, and you can find me at twitter.com/msmithfilmblog, as well as all of my podcasts at filmbook.com, like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and Gotham. You can find our other podcasts at filmbook.com, The Complete Works, there as well. And you can find me on Letterboxd. Follow me on Mike Smith Film. So thank you guys so much for listening to Film Book Cast. If you're listening to the review via our podcast on iTunes, please subscribe to the podcast, rate it, take a moment to give us a review. Any and all feedback, compliments, top discussions, even hate mail can be sent directly to podcast@film-book.com. Please list the podcast you're emailing about and the title of your email. We'll produce so many different ones, hard to keep track. We would love to hear from you. Join us next week for a new episode of Complete Works, in which Mike and I will have a blast discussing Nicolas Cage in one of his finest roles, Vampire's Kiss.
Wow. That's a lot of setup, Mike.
It's a great movie, man.
I'm excited. I've never seen it before, so.
It's pretty wild. It's pretty wild. And then join us in 2 weeks, where I think we're going to be reviewing a film that I'm pretty interested in, Gavin O'Connor's Jane Got a Gun. You excited for that one, Mike?
I haven't heard anything about it other than the trailer I saw before The Revenant, so that's, like, kind of cool. it looks interesting. I'm down. I'm down for a Western.
Yeah. We've had a good run of Westerns, recently, so hopefully this continues the streak. All right, guys, thank you so much for listening to Film Book Cast. We are out. This is Major Tom to ground control. I'm stepping through.